a lot of the basic slogan at that time, it seemingly was acceptable to the group with whom I identified in Howard County, was simply just, do you want noise or do you want action? And generally, the reply was always action, all right, then we want action and results. We're not interested in the noise. It took the telephone call, the letter, or the newspaper articles to accentuate the positive, that's what we wanted. We wanted the results, and we were hungry for results. And that's by some total of work over there. We had our county pretty well divided up at that time into respective areas. Up County, as we call, was going towards Frederick, then Down County, Mid County, Ellicott City, where the county seat was, and action around about North Laurel, since many of our citizens in certain parts of the county did much of our shopping, banking, and so forth in Laurel, so we did concentrate on that end of Prince George's County, too. So anytime problem arose related to the little riot they had in Laurel and all, we played our part quiet and politely, bringing about peaceful agreement and improving the circumstances.
Did the local county branches of the NAACP lobby for the state public accommodations bill in 1963?
Oh, yes.
How involved were the county branches?
Well, they were involved to the point of view where they made visitation to the legislature. They visited the representatives down there. We didn't carry a great deal of signs and all any occasion I was there. We just went as a delegation. We sat through the committee discussions. We conferred with the committee chairman. We didn't have any paid lobbyists there as such. We just buttonholed our representative, basically. Visit them in our offices, as well as follow them to see and observe them on the floor. We were rejected in some instances. Some instances we came back and marshaled our political forces to try to bring about a change in personnel. And a couple of instances in Howard County, I guess we played a pretty good part in bringing about some changes in personnel. Played a very important part in seeking and working for the early election of Senator Jim Clark in Howard County. And ousting Senator Shipley, who told us on one occasion he didn't believe that the white man should give up any rights to the black man or something to that effect. Not his exact words now. They've grown old and rusty and I don't want to quote him, but that was the inference of it. Of course, we differed with that, told him so, left there, and decided then about time for us to work for a change in representation because we were represented to it in Howard County. We weren't satisfied to be left out of the representation as voters. So we did go back and conducted a very extensive voting campaign, furnished free cars to all people who had never cast a vote in their lives. We got them registered, then saw to it with a follow-up they got proposed to vote. And our intent was not to tell them how to vote, but certainly to educate them. And we did by publishing and releasing the records of those over a given period of time, both at the local level and those who run for statewide offices, you know, at the national level. So we did a lot of that. We got the records, I dug them out and published them, posted them, then hand-delivered them, spread them out in churches. In most instances, we got pretty good support from the ministers of churches, both black and white. We had a lot of white ministers that worked with us at that particular time. So it wasn't just a case of just working solely the black church. Unfortunately, we never got any support from Catholic in Howard County. During the years that I was in, got any support, no matter how many appeals we made.
That seems strange.
Well, the Catholic father just never responded to anything. But we had Catholics working with us in the movement.
Individual Catholics.
Yeah.
In 1963, did you or the county NAACP endorse the telegram that I think Mrs. Jackson or the Baltimore NAACP sent to President Kennedy to withhold federal funds from the disaster area in Ocean City after the big storm there, or withhold them until Ocean City stopped discriminating? There was some controversy over this telegram sent to President Kennedy, and then some have implied that this is why the first public accommodations bill was defeated, because the legislators reacted against this telegram. Even one article in the Sun papers quoted Marvin Mandel, who was then a member of the legislature,
right,
as saying this was the cause of it.
Oh, I don't think that was a call. I think the call was just down. I thought so then, still think so, out and out prejudice. There was no desire on the part of the legislature to extend that element of fairness to the black citizen in Maryland. There was no, as far as I know, I don't know of any branch that offered any opposition to what was done. Certainly not in Howard County. The whole thing had been a whole regime of discrimination had been repulsive to blacks for years, all these years. And certainly, you talk about inhumaneness, they saw the whole thing as being inhumane. And that was an approach. It was done to get attention. It was done to emphasize, as we felt, the seriousness of a problem in America. Failed to look at my black brother with the open eyes. Assumed that the black was happy and nonchalant about his rights and privileges. And that assumption still persists. Hasn't vanished yet. It persists all the way to the president's office. We ought to be happy while you're the most blessed a minority group in the world, in the country of your birthright. I should be happy to take second best, which is asinine to me. It's silly. And this is my birthright. This is my country. I paid my dues well. I have every right and privilege. I should have every right and privilege to appertain to any other citizen in this country. Second best is never good enough. At that particular time, the public accommodation, we felt, should not have been an item of major concern. It should have been just a commonplace incident for every citizen. I still feel that way, and would enter into the same kind of involvement again if it were to arise. But I had no personal part in the frame of that telegram, to my knowledge.
Where is the NAACP, or back in the 50s and 60s, where was the NAACP weakest in the state?
Well, you mean what county?
Yeah, what counties or what section? Like
the home county of the governor, when Cartaw became governor, is Somerset, and the county had no chapter and still has no active chapter. Baltimore County, which is a strong urban county up here, never been very effective or strong in mobilization of civil rights activity, and yet had all kinds of problems around there, and still are.
And there's Turner Station, which is...
Well, Turner Station had it in name, but they were really not the active or aggressive branch that they needed, in my estimation. Turner Station, Dundalk area. The only area where you had a chapter existing. None in Towson, none in Catonville. Early in those days went more along the line with CORE, which, never did prove too viable in the state of Maryland.
Were you or the Howard County NAACP involved in the Cambridge demonstrations in 1963?
We had persons to go down there, but as far as the branch sending representatives to participate in demonstration, no, we didn't. I think at some time or another, I believe some monies were assembled and sent to assist the Cambridge branch. I think on several occasions we made donations on behalf of Gloria and her group who were in the midst of it. But we didn't have any delegation to my knowledge. Now, there may have been some that went, but the branch did not appoint or did not send in a representative group. I can say that with accuracy. We concentrated most of our group appearances at the legislative sessions in Annapolis, at the meeting in the county commission. We were under the commission system then in Howard County. So we did appear in small groups at the county commission to petition very strongly on behalf of removing a segregated signs at the courthouse, schoolhouse. They had them in all the public buildings around, black and white signs, laboratories and so on. Improvement of practices at the jail and so forth. Those things were done by the local branch. Appeared at school board meetings, petitioning for changes and improvement in all black school at that particular time, later on moving towards the era of desegregation. So they kept abreast pretty much on educational matters and political undertakings within the county as well as at the state level. I don't know what to do now, but you had some pretty active group chairmen, committee chairmen, who really dug into the research and kept a few hotlines here and there getting data and disseminating that data to the best of our ability. We put out a newsletter called The Spotlight in Howard County and worked on that. I do have some of those kinds of copies, I guess, still available, right? So we drew maps and plotted where the concentrated areas of blacks were and knew the exact number of students at every level of the school program. Matter of fact, I guess we're more abreast sometime on the true statistics than the school personnel was itself when it came to the black family. We kept them up to date. So when we generally went out then to speak, we knew our data. Didn't mind using it.
Why do you think Baltimore was selected as a target city by CORE, and what has CORE's role been in the state and maybe even in the counties?
I'm not as familiar with CORE's program. Never did prove a great attraction to me. I had admiration for Sam Farmer as the lead at that particular time. I felt that CORE certainly played a part and happened to bring about some of the changes. However, being a member of the NAACP, I also know that CORE left the NAACP with some heartaches. Always the legal problems, always the legal expenses. CORE sent them off and got them in jail and so on. NAACP went that bail. Provide the legal services. So CORE never really was organized to handle the aftermath of that engagement. And I believe the strength of an organization is always found its ability to initiate, its ability to pursue, and its ability to make the kinds of adjustment are necessary after the onslaught is made. I think when you attack, you got to be in position then to help to remedy the situation after you have attacked it. How are you going to implement it? What are you going to do? How do you handle the results that will always come after any change? So Corps was not in those areas then when the changes came. They were in many of those. The NAACP lost many, thousands of dollars by the mere fact that many who were jailed and let out on bail bond, who could locate them a day if you wanted to bring them to trial? So all the money that the NAACP put up in those days were just lost by forfeit. And every case that I know of any prominent Corps member getting involved in, generally was the NAACP, in some instances ACLU went to rescue. So you didn't have it all done by NAACP lawyers. You had it done by other groups too. But basically it was the NAACP that went to the legal side of the question.
What do you think the black militants haven't attracted or didn't attract in the 60s and even in the 70s now, the black militants haven't attracted large numbers of blacks to their philosophy or their movement?
You said, why do I think they didn't?
They didn't, yes.
Because the average black is like the average white. He looks at the practical results of something. He isn't so swayed by the theories. You know, theories are fine, but when it comes down to living, you got to deal with the practical applications. So the average black still has a great deal of faith in the legal processes of government. Maybe sometimes that faith is a little blind, but it's still there. The average black believe in the spiritual attributes too, and he isn't for the radical movement that would just say throw everything out and start from scratch, because he's just not so void of experiences that you think you can just throw everything out that's been built up in centuries and start from scratch. Then the average black still gets his basis for certain social action from his religion. His religion is generally that which is epitomized on Sunday morning in your churches. And that may not be the most timely approach, but it's still that which has been indoctrinated in the people. You have to, when people have been indoctrinated certain ways, and education, after all, is a process of indoctrination. We aren't born with certain superb learnings or certain superb methods of reasoning. We generally develop those over a period of time. And to break with tradition abruptly, like many of the black militant groups were advocating, it just didn't make sense to the average black American. He still said, I have my laws, I have my government, I'll take my chances. And I think wisdom lies in that section. Revolution and evolution are two points of view. and most of us had a tendency to want to go along basically with the evolutionary process. And generally it takes longer to do that. Then the next point of view that the average black looked at was just a life and safety. He didn't have an arsenal to carry out any revolution that could end up with killing, moving with firearms and so forth. He can count. So it just wasn't practical in any sense of the word. It is a longer process when you take the legal process. And that is a basic criticism level against the NAACP today. It takes too long to accomplish too little. It's frequently heard. And it does take time when you go through the courts. because court decision can be enacted one level and reversed to the next. And to bypass the next, it costs time and money. So that's the process, though, that we have engaged in. And I believe more, and I believe in that approach. That's why I stay within the ACP. It doesn't mean that we don't change our technique. We got to develop new strategies for dealing with the present day problem. We can't use the same strategies we used 10 years ago and expect them to be effective. That means constantly regrouping our forces, restudying the issues at large, developing new resources, and then going ahead with the processes. It means educating a group or a cadre at all levels. Always got to stay on in that realm of educating people to what the issues are and the ways and means of addressing ourselves to those issues. So it's an ongoing process every day. And although I retired from my official job, I spend more time now, I guess, doing charity work than I've ever done in my whole life.
What was your reaction to Governor Agnew's speech to black leaders in 1968?
Repugnant. I just thought it was untimely, ill-conceived, whoever advised him, and certainly epitomized racism at its best. Although I wasn't here in the Middle West when I read about it, I just thought to myself that there was another way to do it. If he even had those feelings, it could have been done differently. And should have been given a chance for a rebuttal somewhere along the line. There was no chance for anybody to rebut. They were just blasted, unfounded accusations, as far as most of them concerned. Showed again how empty the man was rather than what his great leadership qualities were, as I saw. But I didn't meet the man, didn't meet him until in recent years, really didn't meet him until his downfall, so to speak. I still never knew the person intimately.
During the last 30 years, are there any other public officials, either statewide or locally, that conjure up the same image as McKeldin does when you ask someone about civil rights? And immediately McKeldin as an elected official comes to mind. In your mind, are there any other ones of that of McKeldin's stature?
I have met one in the state of Maryland at this point in time. I think, as I said before, I think there have been some remarkable events occurring under Governor Mandel's administration. And although I don't think Governor Mandel has been nearly as pronounced in his position and in his actions as McKeldin has been, he has been sort of low key, but he has done some remarkable things as a governor. And yet there are certain administrative boards in the state he has never yet looked kindly towards any black input. I think that's a weakness in his administration. Going now from State Board of Education on down to other administrative boards around the state. Or when he has appointed a black, he has not appointed a black that has truly represented the dominant ideals of black people. Generally a black that rarely, if ever, has identified with the black man cause that has been selected. It makes us wonder then, makes me anyway, citizen of the state for some years, make me wonder where does he get find those people and what's his purpose for appointing them when they do not truly represent the dominant views of the black American in the state of Maryland. That has happened time after time as I looked at some of the appointments over the years. And even know the person. And if anybody, any black person in the state have been active in a period of 30 years, I know a little bit about it, I believe, or her.
Who participated in the civil rights movement in Howard and Montgomery counties? Was it an all-black movement, or was it fairly integrated, or?
We always had a fair degree of integration. Mm-hmm. There were a large number of whites, but we had some effective whites to join us. One of the white men that worked rather diligently with NAACP in Howard County was Robert Killerman in Howard County. Worked very effectively through the whole push for desegregation and still worked with the NAACP, although I guess roles have not been as prominent in recent years. Housing, we had a, I can't call Kenneth's last name at the moment. Isn't that something? That name has eluded me. Common name I can't call. We had some white women too that worked along with us. Some of the names have slipped my memory off, man. I don't think they are very effective anymore in working in this branch. I don't know why, but in the early days they came in, joined, worked with us. We had a Mrs. Frances Mello who took an important part with her husband. We called his first name. We had a, at times, Mrs. Anita Arebe, who is still pretty active in Howard County, is one of the women. Then we worked along with the leadership of the League of Women Voters at that particular time. Some of those people are, I understand, in county posts in Howard County now. Some of them joined NAACP, some of them didn't, some of them worked kind of in a coalition with us. The present administrator of Howard County, Edward Cochran, was always cooperative and worked well with us, although during my regime, he never joined the NAACP, almost certainly never joined. He may have, but I don't recall him ever joining. At this point, I guess I've about run out of names of the people. I can see faces, but I'll be honest with you, I can't call names.
But there was a cross-section of,
oh, yeah,
of involvement in the movement in Howard County.
Oh, yeah. We had. And my vice president was white, Robert Killerman, and he became president when I resigned and went to the Middle West in 1966. He served the remainder of my term and didn't run for re-election. And the strongest person that worked in there during those periods of time I was there was the Reverend E.E. Archer, who still works with NAACP. He's a retired minister.
In Howard County?
Yes. And Reverend John Wesley Holland of Cooksville, been very active over the years in Howard County. Mrs. Leola Dorsey, who has run for public office several times in Howard County, still active in there. James W. King, Morris Woodson, Elhart Fleury, they're men in the school system, but they still work closely with the organization. Mr. Frank Hawkins, he's dead and gone on, of course, now. He was a strong man at one time in the organization. Reverend Eileen Moore, she died and passed, and she was very active. Mrs. Mamie Fisher, her daughter, Ms. Corrine Offord, Mr. Jesse Wilson, very strong people and worked very effectively. And some of the younger people, Samuel Young, who's still working, I guess, an officer in the association. They were in the early years of the movement. Calvin Carter, who played a very important part in the program towards housing. Reverend Ivor Robinson, my wife, Dorothy Craft, all of those were people that really stuck and worked around the clock if necessary on issues, and many more that I just named, started naming them all, ticking them all. They were very active in the program. Mrs. Dola White, long time, she worked for a long time before she moved and came to this county. Oh, I guess I better stop. You start calling names, don't name people. Relying on your memory rather than your script is never good.